Hi, and welcome back to another segment of Our Community. You know, the latest surge of COVID, fueled by the much more contagious Delta variant, is continuing its rampage across our country and all of our neighboring counties. For the past several weeks, the available ICU beds in Region 5, which is Josephine and Jackson counties, fluctuated between 0 and 4. Curry County doesn't have any ICU beds to begin with, but Sutter Coast Hospital in Del Norte County, which is where we would go if we can't go to Medford, was overflowing with COVID cases and had actually brought in refrigerator trucks to handle the overflow at the mortuary. What this means for us in practical terms is that there is no room at the inn for any of us who are in a serious accident, have a heart attack, or any other issue that requires critical care. There are reports in the news of people dying from things like a ruptured appendix because there are no hospital beds. And it also puts on hold again those elective but necessary surgeries that we all need from time to time. Basically, we're in a world of hurt. Joining me today to discuss our situation in Brookings Harbor is Brookings Core Response Executive Director Diana Cooper. And today we're also joined by Lauren Farmer, an RN who's been on the front lines for testing and vaccines at St. Timothy's. Welcome to the show, Lauren.
Thank you.
How are you both doing today?
Wonderful.
Good. I was home all day. Lauren was not, so I'm probably doing better even.
Now, Lauren, you were at St. Tim's, huh?
Yes, ma'am. Yes.
And you were doing vaccines?
Vaccines today, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. How many did you do?
20, I think.
Close to 20
by the end of the day. We've been averaging about 20 a day now, so it's pretty darn good.
Yeah. That is good. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've been looking at some of the numbers for the state, the various counties, and wow, it's just not great. I mean, some of the counties are doing okay, you know, but I look at Douglas and Jackson mm-hmm. and Josephine and Curry.
Some are picking up because yeah, I think of the yeah. surge. Some of the people that were on the fence, you know, maybe it went two ways. Some of the people decided just dug their heels in more, but some of them were like, you know, now's the time. So
yeah, yeah.
I think I that's, hope you know that we're seeing some more.
Yeah, yeah.
We are seeing some more vaccinations, and it's kind of a double-sided sword. You know, there's people coming in with very watery, sad eyes. Promising grandma or grandpa that they would get vaccinated because grandma or grandpa passed away. So, I mean, it's mm-hmm. a, you know, we're wow. you know, we yeah. see that and it you know, yeah. there's no shame in any waiting mm-hmm. and choosing now. There's no shame in any of that.
Right.
But it is sometimes a little bit sad the way yeah. people are coming in.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, Lauren, your name is familiar. I don't think I've met you. I know, but I think it was mostly from the chats with Jake.
Yeah, that's
that
where I first
remember.
Saw.
Yeah, I remember
with
seeing
Mayor Jake.
You.
Yeah.
Yes, yeah. I remember seeing you. So you know, tell us a little bit about who Lauren Farmer is.
Well, I got my nursing degree from the University of Washington in 1990. I joined the Army in 1985. And they're the ones that paid for my nursing degree. I became a combat medic, served a tour over in the Middle East.
Wow.
So I have a lot of experience. I have a lot of experience in other countries. Mm-hmm. Also, the majority of my time was spent working in the operating room. I'm a certified operating room nurse, so that's where I spent pretty much the majority of my career.
Wow, you are somebody to have right next to you all the time, right? I mean, that's impressive. That's impressive.
Thank you.
And to be a combat nurse, you know, that's wow. Yeah,
combat trauma nurse actually is wow. the official title.
But, yeah.
Yeah, it really doesn't mean a heck of a lot until it hits the fan. But
yeah.
Other than that, it's pretty good. I worked trauma for 10 years, and then after that, I went into sports medicine, orthopedics, and did that for 10 years.
Oh, that's great. Yeah. Yeah, I bet you've seen some stuff, right?
Oh, believe me, yes.
Yep. Yeah, my dad was a medic in the Navy in World War II, and the stories Oh, he had some stories. You know?
Oh, yes.
You just,
yes,
wow. Yeah, and me, I can't even watch a needle going into my arm. Like, yeah. I'm that crazy phobic. Yeah, I just can't. Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of people can, but that you know, that's okay. Somebody has to do it, right?
I do pretty well with that kind of stuff.
Oh, I'm so glad that it's the two of you. You guys can handle it for me, all right?
Well, they don't let me do any of that. I don't have good aim, I guess, but
yeah. Yeah, well, that would be bad.
They saw me at darts, and they were like, nah.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, the first thing,
the first thing you don't want to hear is aim. So you know, you should pretty much know where you're going before you do it. So and you should really aim. You should just be able to do it.
And you really don't want to hear oops, right?
No oops. No.
Yes.
I did say that in the OR once, and the doctor really chastised me. Ooh. Never say that word. I said, okay, I'm learning, doc.
Yeah. So
I don't know why, when I think of the combat medic, I think of like Saving Private Ryan. I mean, is that what the stuff you were doing?
Well, you know, you look at the combat medics from World War II, and then you look at them from Korea, and you look at them from Vietnam. Each generation of soldiers seems to learn on the previous generation of soldiers. Yeah. Vietnam taught us a tremendous amount of life-saving skills. And when we went into what I call the sand wars, so the wars in Afghanistan, Iraq, we had a knowledge of being able to save lives that is absolutely incredible. Mm-hmm. And it's because of building on all these previous experiences that we learn these things. So if you look at a combat medic, or if you look at the casualties of a war, you know, it doesn't really list the number saved, and we're saving people on the battlefield like you wouldn't believe. I mean, there are people that normally, just not too long ago, it may have been a year ago or two ago, but there was a IED in Afghanistan, and the gentleman lost his arms and legs because of the IED, and they saved his life. So that tells you about the advancements in battlefield medicine. I mean, wow. It's come a long ways.
Wow.
Amazing. Thank you so much, Sam.
Yeah.
No problem.
Amazing, really. So here we are about 8 weeks into the Delta variant surge. I figure we're about 8 weeks, right? Maybe a little bit more. That sounds about right. Mm-hmm. So how are we doing at this point? I mean, it looks to me like at least at St. Tim's, lately the numbers are starting to come down. What do you think?
It certainly does feel like, especially, I wasn't in there today. Yesterday, I wouldn't call any day there's, you know, kind of slow, but even then, you know, up until the last minute, we're still doing a test here and there. And so we definitely fill our time, but it's definitely backed off. You know, we were up to like 130 tests one time in 3 hours, and it was just a lot. So we've definitely seen a decline steadily over the last 2 weeks. But, you know, I'll caution that school just started, so we are already seeing that.
So, Lauren, why do you think the number is coming down? Any sense of that? Are we just in a brief kind of hiatus before it hits again?
Ma'am, I think we are in a brief hiatus before it hits again. I think that because of school starting, we are going to have a resurgence of Delta, and we're going to see it probably in the younger populations just because we cannot vaccinate them. Mm-hmm. So I think we're going to probably see some peaks and troughs here coming and going. But yes, I definitely feel that this is just kind of a lull.
See, I was kind of expecting that after the Pirate Festival, for instance, that we'd have this big blow up of cases, but that didn't seem to happen. So,
well,
you know,
it kind of did.
Okay,
because
so I wasn't,
we anecdotally, yeah. You know, mm-hmm. we're hearing. You know, we can kind of discern sometimes when we're sitting down, you know, like how I knew that the younger woman had gotten it from the fair, the Del Norte County Fair. Right. And so, you know, when you start to kind of see a pattern where one person will come in and they'll say, well, I mean, I went to the Pirate Festival, and I'll ask, you know, were you wearing a mask? And they say no. And so then you'll hear, like, you know, I might hear someone at Michelle's desk. I'll kind of overhear someone saying the Pirate Festival, and then maybe I'll hear of another one. And so we started hearing some of that trickling in. I don't know if it ever got to a point where we were seeing very sick people coming in from the Pirate Festival in the same way we did from Del Norte County Fair. But anecdotally, yes, there was an outbreak in part response to the Pirate Festival, but it wasn't as big as, you know, you would have thought.
It wasn't what I would call a super spreader event unless people got sick and we just don't know that they got sick.
That's true.
Because that can happen if they didn't have a lot of symptoms, right?
Mm-hmm. I think that's exactly the point. How many people truly come in to get tested or are forced to come in and get tested that are showing symptoms that are going through COVID and pretty much going through it and recovering from it.
Right.
Not everybody gets tested, so we're only looking at a kind of a fraction of the population.
What do you think that fraction is, Lauren? How many?
Oh, golly.
I mean, is it pretty low?
Diana would be better at that, at probably that. But I would guess, just out of a guess, maybe we see 30% of the people that are truly infected out there.
Wow.
What would you say, Diana?
I feel like it's even less.
It could be lower. It could be much lower, actually.
I feel like if we saw, you know, maybe close to 1,000 people, what was our you know, our positivity rate is quite a bit down. So if we saw 10%, I don't know. I feel like it's probably maybe a sixth of our population here in Brookings, but also a lot of these people are from different areas too. So
it's
really, really hard to kind of know what population of our town. But I would say maybe even like a tenth are coming in to get tested throughout the course of a month, or maybe even over the 2 months we've been open. So that's pretty vague answer, but.
Well, you know, but how can you get it any better than that, right? I mean, it's not like you've got a census going on, right?
Right.
It's not like you can actually, right?
It really is a guesstimate.
I'm sure we could actually, you know, pull all of the data and see like how many individual people from just the 97415 zip code were tested over the last 2 months, but it would definitely be a lot of data pull.
Yeah, exactly. And I think I saw the positivity rate at this point for 97415 is around 9%, which is definitely down, because I remember it was only like 4 weeks ago or something that you guys were hitting 20%, you know, at St. Tim's. You were hitting 20%, and it was happening just about every day. You were getting real close to that number, which was scary for some of us.
You know,
a little bit scary.
What's really been interesting is that we haven't seen any drastic spike or lull. So even when we see 10 people, well, I don't know that there's been a day we've seen 10 people. I think it's at least been like 30 or 40 a day. But even when we see those low numbers, it's the same percentage that we would see any other day, or very, very similar. And so it's definitely been, they're definitely consistent numbers. When the percentage starts going up for the county, we see that in the clinic. When it's going down for the county, we see it in the clinic, regardless of how many people are testing. So I think that that positivity rate, you know, it doesn't even matter how many people are testing. That positivity rate is pretty accurate. So if we have six, you know, I'm obviously way rounding, but if we have 6,000 people in Brookings, you know, 600 are positive. So I would say that that's pretty accurate from what we see.
Yeah.
I would agree with that, Diana.
So I heard that there's already been a case in the school. Was it K school where one of the classes got shut down, or kindergarten or something? There was some class that got shut down.
I think there were a couple. I actually heard from a friend who has a kiddo in the high school that they had their first case. That was not someone that came into the clinic or anything, but so I'd heard that. We've heard from a few teachers, both in Del Norte and Curry County. Actually, I think quite a bit more of the folks from the school, you know, have been from Del Norte County. But I have heard of some classes being exposed at Calmeopsis as well. And somebody mentioned yesterday about Azalea. But, you know, they weren't anybody that I tested and talked to. Right. So,
I saw something. Yeah, I don't know. Lauren, have you heard anything?
You know, about school closures, I don't really keep up on that. Okay. Just because we work with Del Norte and us so much and the Smith River there, it's really hard to keep up. But yes, yeah. I've definitely heard of classes being closing down. I've definitely heard of daycares being closing down because of too many kids being affected or too many kids testing positive. So it is happening, but exactly where and what school, you know, it's kind of hard to...
pinpoint
that. Yeah.
Another piece of that is that as we hear from all these kind of just these different little pockets, a school here and a school in Del Norte and Smith River, Crescent City, the processes for the both of the public health for Curry County and Del Norte County are different enough that we have a hard time sometimes when we're doing the data entry and collecting the information, telling them their results, we have a hard time directing them sometimes on what the process should be for them to isolate and quarantine as far as their kiddos, because California has different public health guidelines than we do. And so that's actually been a little bit difficult. And some of the schools are more conservative with their guidelines and some are not at all. And so I think that we will see more outbreaks.
Well, I saw a report just the other day from the public health people in Del Norte, and I don't think they had not yet hit 50% vaccination rate. I mean, I'm thinking, wow.
Yeah, I think doing better here.
Well, we're not doing a whole lot better. I looked it up today, and our zip code 97415 is around 53%. So, I mean,
we're not last, and
we're not last. But honest to Pete, right?
You talk about that 53%, and it really is just one arm at a time. And I'm doing my best to get that number up there, but. At 20 a day, that's not gonna gonna bring it up very quickly, Candace. Yeah. And we need a broader, larger outreach to get those people vaccinated.
I just don't know how to do it. You know, I because the stuff that I'm seeing on Facebook, the arguments against vaccination most of them are so outlandish that you just kind of shake your head, but these people have their heels dug in. They are,
well, I think Lauren would probably agree, we'd probably all agree, Facebook is not the place to get medical advice, and it's definitely maybe not everybody would agree, but everybody here, I think, agrees on that. Yes. And it's in the same turn, it's not the place to sit down with someone usually and have that conversation. And so the provider's office is the best place, even if it's a peer or a colleague, or a really great place is in our testing clinic. That's where a lot of the conversations happen. And so, Lauren probably has talked to quite a few people who have just been hesitant, even coming in to get a vaccine, I'm sure, haven't you?
Oh, absolutely. Even today. So, yes, absolutely.
And what is the concern? What's the major concern when you're, that you've seen over time?
The concern regarding hesitancy?
Yeah.
Right now, what I'm seeing actually is kind of odd. First thing I'm seeing is 15-year-old and above kids coming in and choosing to be vaccinated, because in Oregon they have the right to do that as their own signer.
Mm-hmm.
So we are seeing that, you know, and that they're making that decision on their own, and we support that. OHA supports that. And then, you know, I'm seeing what seems to be shame. You know, people coming in now and saying, why did I wait so long?
Oh.
And the why did I wait so long is absolutely irrelevant to me. All that is relevant is, let's talk now. You know, mm-hmm. let's talk about here in the future for you, because there's no shame. There is no shame. Yeah. You know, there's so much misinformation out there, and there's so many rabbit holes we can go down that just come in and talk to me, and I'll be glad to just sit and talk to you about everything I know about it.
Do you get, I don't sit over there on that side. I'm not allowed on that side.
You're not. Yes.
I know. So not just for the, because I can't aim, but because I'm over in the testing area and they don't want me, you know, traipsing through in my COVID stuff.
Please
so
don't. Yes.
I'm just curious, you know, when you're talking to them, kind of like what their fears are around the vaccine itself. Okay. And like, do they ask about the ingredients? Do they ask things like that?
You know, people do ask about the ingredients. And if you look at the ingredients on the vaccine, I dare you to memorize all those.
Or even understand what they
even,
are.
Or even pronounce their names. Them,
right. Or even look them up and still be able to understand or pronounce them. Which I tried, so.
Right. Yes. But what I can tell you is that these vaccines have 80% less. Can I say crap?
Sure.
Have 80% less crap in them than even vaccines of the 80s. So these are some of the safest vaccines, actually, that the United States has been able to come out with and come out with quickly. And a lot of it is because of that mRNA technology, which is fantastic. Technology that is going to change this world, not only in vaccines, but not only that, but Johnson & Johnson came out with a very good vaccine, doing it the good old-fashioned way. Mm-hmm. And all three of the vaccines are highly effective in doing their jobs, and are probably some of the safest vaccines we've had in the last 30 years.
Wow, I didn't know that. That's amazing.
Well, you know, people don't understand. You know, if I call them my babies, I'm sorry, because I do take care of them. Like
mm-hmm. Yeah.
But you know, they all have to have the right temperature and their right mood and their persnickety little things. But you know, when you talk about freezing, you know, these deep freeze, and why do we have to deep freeze? And that's because of the Moderna and Pfizer. Run off of lipids. They run off of fats. So fats are very simple to your body. They're very simple for your body to get rid of. They're very simple for your body to understand. Mm-hmm. But in the process of that, keeping it running off of fats versus running off of proteins is that we have to keep it super cold or it's going to spoil. It's just, you know, fats spoil fast. And by keeping it super cold, we can keep it lasting longer and keep the effectiveness of the vaccine available. But
it's
believe
just,
me, it is amazing stuff, and it's persnickety. I mean, every day I'm babysitting those little vials.
Yes.
You know, I can guarantee that my vaccines are 100% potent, just by the fact that people will come in and complain about side effects once in a great while. So, you know, it tells me at least I know my vaccines are being held to their highest standards. But we keep incredible track of every vaccine we have. We keep incredible track of their record, of their, you know, how long they've stayed in the freezer, how long they've stayed in the fridge. And it's a lot of work. But in that process of that work, we're able to keep out so many of the ingredients that we used to put in there, all those preservatives that would keep a vaccine in a fridge for a year, you know, we're getting rid of those things.
So I wonder, you know, there have been a growing number of people, I think, over the past 30 years or so that are concerned and have been concerned about vaccines and what has been in the vaccines. So I wonder if maybe there were things in the vaccines 30 years ago that weren't so great, and now, you know, we're making real progress.
Absolutely, Candace. You know, to sit there and say everything was perfect in the 70s and 80s, or 50s and even 40s regarding vaccines, even with the polio vaccine, they had some problems. And mm-hmm. So, you know, it's not an exact, you know, you kind of feel your way as you go. Right. But in the safety regards of the vaccines, they have come a long ways, and they've come a long ways because you know people don't want all those things in their bodies, mm-hmm. and if we don't have to put them in there, I understand that. There's no reason to have to do that. In the flip side of that, it makes for having to take care of the vaccines a lot more stringent, but that's okay. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's okay. Work to be done. To limit the number of you know, I hate to call them poisons, but you know, in high enough quantity, sure they are. Mm-hmm. You know, when we give them in small little amounts as a preservative in a vaccine, they're not. But you know,
yeah. No, I think
they've come a long ways.
Yeah, and I think that's something that, you know, people have a tendency to forget, is that science is actually fluid. You know, it's not set in cement.
No.
It's not meant to be set in cement. It's meant to be fluid. It's meant to be questioned and looked at. And again, as we learn more, to look more. I mean, it's...
Absolutely.
That's why we've got brains, you know, to think. We're supposed to be thinking. So, yeah.
With science, you know, the great thing I love about science, for every one question answered, there's 10 more questions that pop up. And that's the beautiful thing about science is there is never an end to it.
Yeah, yeah. So. And it's exciting. I mean, all of those questions are exciting. Yeah. I love it. So in terms of side effects, because I got the Moderna, and the first one wasn't bad, you know, in terms of side effects. I had like a little bit of, you know, didn't feel great. But the second one, you know, it had me down for 2 days. I was most definitely not feeling well. So I'm wondering, like, what does that say that about the, what does that say?
Well, I'll tell you what that says, Candace. It says you and I are a lot alike in that regard. The first shot you had, you said you had Moderna, correct?
Yep.
Yeah. Same thing I got. And, you know, the first shot, you know, sore arm. Everybody mm-hmm. gets a sore arm. That's a given. Right. Second shot, you know, it just laid me down for a couple of days. One thing that I have noticed about these side effects is that they taper off usually within 72 hours.
Right.
Diana had one of the worst, probably, second shots you could get, but she made it through it, you know?
Leave it to Diana.
I just
leave it.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, the center of attention. You know.
Again, there we go. and not to outdo my own self, but again, having had COVID before, way worse. You know, the mm-hmm. the vaccine was, I would take that any day. And I actually wanted to ask you about this, Lauren. So I read something today, and I'm just, again, disclaimer, I am not a nurse or doctor. But I did read something today, not on Facebook, that was talking about the having had COVID and then having gotten the vaccine, and that combination actually creating a more diverse protection and immunity, and which makes sense. But I wanted to ask what your thoughts are.
Well, Diana, that makes perfect sense, and it also makes perfect sense as to why you had such a bad reaction on your second.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Because you did have COVID. So, you know, the way these vaccines work is they're really looking at the inner spokes of a wheel, and these mutations are sending out different spokes. But as long as those inner spokes remain the same, the vaccines are going to target them and destroy them. Your antibodies will target them and destroy them because of these spokes. Mm-hmm. And natural immunity will give you the spokes to maybe Delta, but it's not going to give you every spoke that may come along the line with Lambda or whatever Greek alphabet we give the next one.
Yeah.
So
I can't even keep up.
I know. There'll probably be more. There will be more. But the vaccines work on making your antibodies see those inner spokes. You see those spokes that are all alike with every COVID, no matter whatever mutation it might be. It's going to detect those inner spokes as being, okay, that's it. I'm going to attack that. And that's how the vaccines are designed to work. And that's how they work against the different variants as the variants come along.
I heard that there's a new one. Where I read about it like 2 days ago. I think it's spelled M-U.
Moo. Oh, that's been around for a minute because I heard about that at least a couple weeks ago.
Okay. Yeah, the one I'm kind of keeping an eye on is Lambda, but you know, as a thing, the thing people have to understand is when you have parts of this world that have a million people to 10 square miles, incredibly poor.
Yes.
It may be an exaggeration, Diana. I didn't do the exact math, but there's a lot of people. Yes. But these people are poor. And these people are poorly housed, and these are where these mutations, you know, generally a lot of mutations come from. Yeah. They come from these poor countries that cannot, or just do not have the availability to get down to the levels of their poor. And you know, I'm talking kind of like Rio de Janeiro, India. Mm-hmm. Sometimes. It's so hard to get down, in there to vaccinate and to help these people. That's where these mutations are formed, and that's where they come out of.
Right. So it's good to keep an eye on that stuff.
Because, absolutely,
you know,
it is.
And what about the breakthrough cases? Because that of course has me a little bit concerned, having been vaccinated. And I am now in my 70s, so I'm one of those, right? That I'm one of the fragile ones or whatever.
So fragile, yeah.
I don't feel fragile, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
But I also have a husband who is basically disabled. So if I bring the virus home, you know, I'm going to lose him. So what the numbers I'm looking at keep going up. In terms of the breakthroughs, I mean, we're now looking at like 20%.
First, your husband's been vaccinated, correct?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay. Breakthroughs are going to happen with every vaccine, and when you look at the efficiency rate of Pfizer and Moderna, let's just take those two. Mm-hmm. At being 93%, 95%. You know, maybe 92, 95. You know, it's been wavering around there, and it's been wavering around there for about a year. Mm-hmm. So I would say let's just go with 93. Well, that leaves 7 out of every 100 people they could possibly have a breakthrough. That does not mean the vaccine will not protect them. And that is the most important part that has to be understood, is that the vaccine may allow you to get COVID, but it's going to still protect you. It's still going to start fighting much earlier. Your body's going to start fighting much earlier than as if you had not had the vaccine. So already those antibodies, those memory cells, those T cells, there's a lot to the immune system that a lot of people don't understand. Mm-hmm. But all those cells, you know, they start working together, and already they're saying, you know, I got an idea what this is. They're going to start protecting you more than you realize. So you may have a breakthrough case. And what we're seeing, Diana, you can maybe verify this. The breakthrough cases we are seeing are incredibly mild. They are staying incredibly mild compared to the ones that are not vaccinated and what we're seeing come through. Those are the sickest people that we're seeing.
Yeah, and I would say that prior to really Delta becoming as prominent here as it was before this recent surge, you know, we did see occasional breakthrough cases. I think Delta really pushed it over the edge. But, you know, when we were seeing people who were sick with COVID, which, you know, when we were pretty sure it was Delta, we don't test for the variant in our clinic, but we were pretty sure it was Delta during that surge. And, you know, Delta doesn't just stop at some of the main symptoms of coronavirus. You know, it attacks the kidneys, it attacks the liver, it attacks the heart, the lungs, it attacks all these different organs. And so even when the people are done, you know, like I think we talked about this before, when you're done with the flu, you're done, you know, unless you're much elderly and you have really heavy underlying conditions, you're done, you're good. Mm-hmm. But with this, when you recover, you know, it's done damage to your organs and there's no telling what's going to recover and what's not. So when people are coming in now and they're testing and they have a breakthrough, and again, we're fairly certain it's Delta, they're not, you know, some of them, most of them are asymptomatic and don't even know. You know, they're on their way somewhere and they want to test to make sure they're okay. A couple of times, I can think of one time where she was, you know, had some pretty good cold-like symptoms. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I don't know where she is now, so I can't validate that right. She's okay, but
right.
It's just totally different than seeing people sick. Totally different.
Mm-hmm.
It is totally different. I agree with you, Diana. And Candace, what we have to remember is that the majority or all the people, if not the majority, all the people there in Sutter that are on ventilators, I bet you the majority, 9 out of 10, have not been vaccinated. And that's just the cruel truth of the matter. Probably 10 out of 10, and talking to Dr. Talbot, who works with Sutter, it has been 10 out of 10, 10 out of 10. You know, everybody that has been put on a ventilator lately has been unvaccinated. And that was the info I got from her.
Mm-hmm.
Did you? Go ahead.
No, it just seems like such a simple thing. Just get the jab, right? And
right.
And you don't have to, yeah.
It,
go ahead.
It's very safe. People don't under, you know, you talk, we can talk about the side effects. And the main thing I can say, and this is what I tell everybody about the side effects, ride the storm, they'll be over in 72 hours. And most of the time, they're over within 72 hours. I mean, they peak and trough, they'll go up and they drop. And
yep.
And you know, so just other than that, the side effects are very minimal compared to some of the other vaccines out there. I mean, there's some vaccines out there that give you some really wicked side effects. COVID vaccines do not.
I have to get my second shingles shot.
Okay, I'm sorry, Candace. I wasn't going to say shingles.
I know, because my friends have had it.
I'm sorry. I was not going to say shingles shot.
And I appreciate that, but yeah. I already know it's coming, and I already know I have to do it. So.
Well, yes, that is one of the most unfriendly out there.
Yes.
So I have that to look forward to with all of my lovely reactions.
Yes, I'm so sorry. Yes. So, and the other thing is that, you know, what I'm seeing in most of the deaths that are being reported is that they say that underlying conditions are present. And, you know, there's like people want to make a big deal out of that. Like their people are dying not from COVID, they're dying from the underlying conditions. Well, almost all of us have an underlying condition, don't we?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
Come on.
I have an underlying condition and it's just asthma. It isn't going to kill me unless I, you know, got a respiratory infection or something that was bad enough.
Like COVID.
COVID.
Like COVID.
In thinking back, you know, I had to be on a whole separate inhaler while I was sick, a steroid inhaler alongside my rescue inhaler, which I mean, prior to COVID, my asthma was not a concern to me. I ran cross country. I was slow, I carried an inhaler, but I ran and I was all right. It never occurred to me that it could be life-threatening, but it's an underlying condition.
Right.
And so with this, it certainly is a serious underlying condition.
Yeah.
So.
Absolutely. And Candace, you're absolutely right. You know, and I wish and I begged and I've argued with OHA to please remove that from their data. It is absolutely irrelevant data. To us, because basically you dig into pretty much anybody that's over 40's history, they're going to have underlying conditions. Or, you know, myself, I'm a chubby monkey and I'm on a blood pressure medication. Well, that's, you know, those are two underlying conditions. You know, Diana's young, healthy, but she has asthma. That's an underlying condition. All of them are irrelevant to the fact that most people out there have underlying conditions of one sort or another. So that data, it's really misleading data.
And we don't know how to interpret that as consumers of that. We're not, you know, we're not seeing what that is. So we're just taking that to fit our narrative either way. It's kind of important.
Yeah, because if they said something like, you know, the underlying condition was high blood pressure, it's like, well, that person and half of the rest of the population of the planet, you know.
Right.
So you know that can't possibly have been the thing that killed them was their high blood pressure, right?
Right.
It was not. Right. It was COVID.
It was still COVID.
Yeah.
You know, maybe the high blood pressure, maybe obesity and maybe other things attributed, you know, so they're ones that you can say, okay, these things all acted together, but had not COVID infected the body, they would not have acted together to cause demise.
Because you look at people with underlying conditions, you know, my husband included, they are controlled through medication.
Right.
That's, you know, they are controlled and he's living and, you know, having a good life. So it's not like he's in danger of dying from those underlying conditions. But if he got COVID, that would be it.
I'm still running, but it's not killing me on the side of the road.
Yeah, exactly.
Well,
exactly.
You know, Candace, you say if he got COVID, that would be it. But, you know, you have to remember your husband is still protected by that vaccine. So if he got COVID, it would not necessarily mean that would be it for your husband.
Okay.
It would just mean he might have a little bit of a battle, and you might have to you know, do some TLC.
Right.
But most likely, he would probably still stay out of the hospital because I really have faith in that vaccine. I mean, and it's not blind faith. I mean, this is faith that I've studied over the last year, and
we see, you know, this, you know, in the clinic.
We see.
I mean, much older. Older than your husband, we see people come in who got the vaccine who have COVID, and you know they're relatively fine. I won't say everybody is because I'm sure even in our community there are people who have had a breakthrough that have gotten very sick. But and I don't want to discount that. But I mean, I've seen people who are in otherwise poor health, positive for COVID, and do okay, like they're fine, you know. So.
Lauren, what's some of the misinformation that is out there about COVID and vaccines?
Oh my gosh, the misinformation. We could go on for 19 hours at least.
Well, let's just try a couple of minutes.
Okay, a couple of minutes. Your first thing, anybody that's had it can usually attest to the fact that COVID is not the flu, not even close to the flu. This is a different virus altogether. It doesn't even live in the flu family. They might both be dogs, but they're different types. They're different breeds of dogs. So
one is a Chihuahua and one is a Great Dane.
Right. But yet they can both be a virus.
Yes.
You know? So, you know, every virus is not comparable to each other.
I'm just picturing COVID as this little aggressive Chihuahua now. Thanks.
It could be, you know, it would be too.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
You know, it wouldn't be a big,
It
wouldn't be a big dog. Yeah. Constantly.
Anyway, go ahead.
Yeah. But, you know, the misinformation out there, a lot of people are just getting the information wrong from either the internet or they're getting the information wrong from Facebook or social media. And they're just not listening to their doctors. They're not listening to the people that are trained to understand it, the people that went to school for a lot of years to really try to understand this chemistry, this microbiology. And if they would listen to their doctors, if they'd listen to their doctors' nurses, I think, or if they would at least have a conversation with them, I think it would dispel a lot of the myths out there. But there's so many myths about COVID that started off from the get-go. And then again, the main thing is, you know, COVID is a much deadlier disease than the flu. It is a much it is much more contagious than the flu, and that makes it much more dangerous. And with the Delta variant, when it came out, that was its main threat. And when we first started looking at it many months ago, it's like, oh wow, you know, that this bugger has upped the ante on how it can be caught or how easily it can be caught.
Right.
So, you know, and we will get other variants to still come down. The main thing that is going to protect us and will protect our county and will give us this shield, give us this bubble back, is when we get about a 70% vaccination rate. And herd immunity is a false existence. It really does not apply. It is totally misunderstood.
Yeah, it can't really, can it? If the virus keeps mutating,
absolutely right. Not. It yeah. Can't, yeah. And that's why it is a false. You do gain a certain amount of natural immunity, of course, mm-hmm. when you have had COVID, but that natural immunity is actually going to be to the Delta strain, right. And who's to say what Lambda or Echo or whoever,
yeah, whatever
else
the
come
other
down
ones.
The road,
yeah,
you know, that Delta acquired immunity may not affect that a bit, whereas the vaccines are equipped to recognize the differences in the variances and get at the problem.
So there's another thing, which is this ivermectin, and which as I understand is a horse dewormer. But there are people who swear by it, and I'm talking in this community. There are people who swear by it, and the latest thing is gargling with betadine solution, which sounds absolutely wretched
so
to me.
I don't know if this is because I'm younger, but you're going to have to explain what betadine is to me.
Well, you go ahead, Lauren. You can explain it better than me. All I know is it's red.
Betadine is iodine. Betadine is bromidone iodine together. So it's iodine. It is that really dark colored stuff that they put on a wound to clean it, or they clean your body prior to surgery with it. That's what betadine is used for. Yeah. It can be diluted, and it can be used as a gargle. We've used it diluted as a gargle for people before they've had oral surgery. But that's a pretty darn specific reason to use it, because they're going to have oral surgery in the next 6 hours. So we also use Hibiclens in the sense of the same way. But it has not been FDA approved. It has not even been looked at as something that couldn't be effective in that. It really is. It really is false information. I mean, you could gargle with alcohol, you can gargle with salt water, you can gargle with a lot of things that are going to kill, or even peroxide that's been diluted. You can gargle with a lot of things that are going to kill germs in your mouth. That does not necessarily mean that something is not going to get down into your lung.
Plus, which doesn't, I don't know, doesn't the COVID live up in your sinuses? Isn't that?
It lives everywhere. It can live up in your sinuses. It can live down in your lungs.
In your organs.
You can have, mm-hmm. in your organs, you can have it, you can merely just wipe your eye. That'd and it can great. Be that simple introduced wow. into your eye. Wow. So you know, switching with betadine, nah, don't do it. Betadine overdose is very dangerous. People get very sick on betadine. Iodine is a you know, something that is found in our bodies, but it's a trace mineral. It's a trace element. So it's not something that's found in high quantities. I wouldn't advise any of that. It is.
Is any of that?
Yeah, the ivermectin.
The ivermectin,
ivermectin it is. I don't even know how that all got started. As far as is who thought that ivermectin would be the cure-all for this. Everything I've read about it, it doesn't even work along the same pathways as COVID. It is used in humans. So I can't say that it's not used in humans. Mm-hmm. It is prescribed for humans, for roundworms and some other kind of very tropical type of parasitic diseases. Mm-hmm. So it does have a label. It can be prescribed by the FDA. And if a doctor chooses to prescribe it off-label for COVID, there is not much anybody can do about that except the government to get on that doctor and say, you know, what in the world are you doing? This isn't safe. It is not FDA approved. It is not safe. It is not. And I'll tell you what, if you want to go out there and get horse or cow dewormer, and they use it on cows too, the concentration is going to be incredibly higher. You look at a cow weighing 1,200 pounds or whatever, the concentration is incredibly higher than what a human would ever need. So, you know, flirting around with thinking we know more, and getting a hold of drugs that we know little about is really dangerous. And until the FDA approves something, and they have approved something, you know, they've approved Regeneron, they've approved the monoclonal antibody therapy, which is actually a cocktail of different drugs. But so there are some treatments, but those are not treatments. So those are things that get spread on the pathways, get spread on the airways, and it gets spread on the internet. And some doctors run with it, and they're wrong in what they do. And those doctors, if somebody ODs on it and dies from it, those doctors are going to be in a lot of trouble because they prescribed a medication off-label. And it's very dangerous to prescribe medications off-label.
Yeah, I would think that if the doctors don't know what they're doing...
Well, we're all in trouble. Well, you know, we're not talking every doctor, and 99% of the doctors are not going to prescribe that for COVID.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's just something you're not going to find. And sadly, you can't. Anyway, yeah. There's one provider here that's being a bugger. But anyway, we shouldn't even be finding providers around here that would even consider prescribing it.
So it seems to me that we what really needs to change are people's hearts and minds, and I don't know how to do that. How do we change the way people are looking at this? There's so much, you know, the people who've got their heels dug in, they're talking about it's, you know, it's them, it's all about them, it's all about what they want and their freedoms and their liberty, and yet the reality of a community, the reality of the human race getting as far as we've gotten, is that we are community. That's what we do. That's what we are. We are interdependent. And I just don't know how to even begin to have that conversation with people.
For me, it would be to come center lane, you know, no right, no left, just come middle of the line. Let's join together as neighbors, just like we did during the Checo Fire. Remember how people came together in this community during the Checo Fire?
Yep.
We can do that again. And we can have that same community, that same support and love for each other. We just need to get rid of the right and the left and just run down the middle. And if we can just run down the middle, things will get taken care of.
Well,
but how do you do it, right?
There are some...
Education, I think. I think a lot of it is education. That's my focus point is please talk to somebody that knows more than the internet. Talk to somebody that has real experience dealing with this. I've given, I can't even keep track, well over a couple thousand of these shots. So, mm-hmm. You know, I do know them. And
right.
I know all about them. Just talk to somebody. We'll talk to you.
Yep.
And we'll discuss any. We'll answer all the questions you have.
Yeah.
And there's no shame. There's no shame. There's no guilt. There's nothing.
Right.
Just come talk to us.
Right.
Like going back to kind of what I was saying earlier, where it really is going to be on an individual level. And mm-hmm. this is in the same sense that we can come together the way we did for Chetco Bar Fire. This is different because even a forest fire can be made political, apparently. But I think that a forest fire is something visible. It's a visible threat. And this is an invisible threat. And so you have people that are, and I know because this is a world I've lived in for a long time. You know, I've made it no secret that we have done a different vaccine schedule for our kids than what was provided by the school district and the health departments. And we've lived in those circles with parents for the last 14 years. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be a different experience. We're not talking about getting the people who want to get vaccinated to come around. They're already there. They're either vaccinated or they've got an appointment on the books. Yep. But we're talking about the people who are traditionally, that are traditionally much more, I would say, even conscientious about the vaccines, even though I get that that's difficult to think about right now when we're seeing so much loss.
I understand that.
But it's, you know, when you do have a child who's had some sort of reaction or has some additional illness, it can get really scary. And parents talk about these things. This is a much larger conversation, I know, but it's really going to be, I think that for some of the parents that I know, that I've known over the years that we've had these conversations with, it's going to be personal for them. It's going to have to come close and hit close to home for them. And you know.
Yep. Yep.
And also, and we are seeing that, Diana, you know, and also Candace, I think, a lot of it will start with our school age kids too. And once we can start really vaccinating and putting these vaccines into the routine of the schools and what you need to go to school and what you have to have before you can go to school, you know the routine.
Right.
Yeah.
And eventually when we can start doing that, we're going to start seeing a bigger number get vaccinated. I didn't look at the census, but I don't know how many people out there are under 18. But in Curie County,
it's about a third of our population.
I think. That's a lot. That's a large number. Yeah. I mean, that's a large number of what I call little germ bugs running around, because that's what.
Yeah, I got four of those germ bugs here. So
yeah, I know that's what they do. They're little germ bugs, and that's their responsibility is to be germ bugs and play in the dirt. Yeah, you know.
So I hate to do this, guys.
Yeah, no problem.
But guess what? We've run out of time. See, didn't I tell you, Lauren, it was going to go by so fast.
It does every time.
Yeah, it really does. So
yes, you did, Candace.
Thank you so much, you know, both of you. Lauren, it was a pleasure having you on the show. And I do hope that you will come back, because you've got great information and a great perspective, and it's the best. So
thank you.
And thank you for listening. Remember that individual responsibility must exist right alongside individual liberty. And without community, human beings would cease to exist. We are meant to be interdependent, with the strongest looking out for the weakest, because those roles reverse several times over the course of a lifetime. Be good to each other. This is Candace Michelle for our community. See you next week.